dices no. ¡Puta sucia!
Welcome back, Vice fans, to the Vice of Miami podcast for show 72 and the last one covering specific episodes of season 3. Tim, can you believe we're already here finishing up season 3?
I can't believe it, and even the fact that we're into our third year of doing this.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
I was just looking when we started this season. We recorded May 4th, so it took us a whole year to get this. And a couple weeks off here and there for illness and travel, whatever, but it took us a whole year to get through 24 yeah. episodes.
Yeah, but that's about right. That's
Every 2 weeks. So I can't believe we're here, man. And ended up season 3. We're going to do the recap coming up here pretty soon. And it's fun. We've got two more coming up. And then we'll probably do the movie, I'm assuming. It'll be a little bit different.
Well, they're in the box set of the DVDs, there's lost episodes.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that.
There are lost episodes.
I know in season 5, after one of the episodes, if you look at production codes on the wiki, the production codes are for the episodes after the last technical last episode. They're before the last episode when they actually recorded them. So maybe that's what it is. But we'll have to pay attention to production codes in season 5. So yeah, I think there's like what, three or four, or something.
Yeah,
like that, maybe five.
Something like that. Yeah.
We got a couple more years, maybe less than a couple of years, but if we don't get sick or don't travel. But
there you go.
It's all good. Look, what do you say we get started on this final one for season 3?
Let's do it to it.
All right. Everybody, Tim and I are always glad you're joining us. We definitely hope you enjoyed the last show covering Everybody's in Showbiz. So as always, sit back, relax, grab your favorite beverage, and enjoy the Vice of Miami podcast covering season 3, episode 24, Heroes of the Revolution.
And Mark, this was written by Dick Wolf and a teleplay by John Shulian. It was directed by Gabriel Beaumont. The original air date was May 8th, 1987, and it is the 68th episode overall in the series.
And for our plot here, the team is working on a Cuban named Pedrosa. They discover another man keeping tabs on him as well. They learn that he is a communist agent. He then goes to see Gina and tells her that he knew her mother when she was still in Cuba and that she was murdered by a jealous ex-lover, Pedrosa. Okay, let's check out for the final episode, the guest stars and the co-stars. First up, we have Jerome Crabb as Klaus Herzog. I probably butchered that name. Born December 5th, 1944 in Amsterdam, Netherlands. He's a Dutch actor. Crabb began his career in Dutch films and TV shows, working on them from 63 until the 80s, when he made his first American film appearance in a 1986 movie, Jumpin' Jack Flash. That's a very good movie. Other movies he stars in are The Living Daylights, awesome movie. That's a James Bond movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a James Bond movie. Prince of Tides, Dangerous Beauty, and his most recent American film, Albert Schweitzer. He has limited TV appearances such as Robin Hood, Family of Spies, and his most recent American TV appearance in the 1999 TV movie, Jesus. Crabb married his wife, Herma, in 1964, and they have three sons.
Our next guest are Sean Elliott as Orestes Pedrosa, born February 24th, 1937 in Puerto Rico, and he is a Puerto Rican actor, or he was. He began his career as a musician in 1976, releasing a disco album, Mr. Love, under the name Santiago. He then moved into acting and made his debut in 1977's Short Eyes. Other movie roles include Deadpool, great movie, Beat Street, Do the Right Thing, and his final appearance in 2006's Kidnapped. Elliott married actress Donna Murphy in 1990 and adopted a daughter, and he has two daughters from previous relationship. Elliott died on March 11, 2016. in New York City at the age of 79.
Next is George Dickerson as FBI agent Chet Blakemore. Born July 25th, 1933, he's an American author, poet, and actor. Dickerson began his career as a writer of poetry, reading his works to audiences in the 1950s and 1960s, and having his work praised by Norman Mailer. In the 1970s, he turned to speechwriting for a United States congressman, and then for United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, headquartered in Beirut, Lebanon, where he experienced firsthand the 1975-76 Lebanese Civil War, which left him suffering from PTSD and writer's block. His acting career began on television with an appearance in the series A Man Called Sloan, and then The Incredible Hulk, L.A. Law, and his most recent TV appearance, 1995's TV movie As Good as Dead. Some movies include The Star Chamber, The Cutter's Way, and his most recent film appearance, Stranger in the Kingdom. Dickerson was married to Victoria Chess from 1965 until their 78 divorce. Then he married Suzanne Hartman from 1978 until his death at 81 from a long illness in New York on January 10th, 2015. He is survived by his four children.
Our next guest stars George Gerdes as FBI agent. Not a lot about him other than he was born February 23rd, 1948. George was an American actor. He died from a brain aneurysm on January 1st, 2021 in Glendale, California at the age of 72.
And wrapping up our guest stars, we've got Larry Block as owner-manager of the club, The Blue Note. Born October 30th, 1942, he's got an extensive TV and filmography, but some of them include Sesame Street, Seamus, Slapshot. He was the ref who told the Hansons to play clean when the anthem played. Heaven Can Wait, MASH, and in 2012, his final TV appearance was Smash, and in 2012, again, his final movie appearance was Hellbenders. Block married Jolly King from 1981 until his death on October 7th, 2012, at the age of 69. He also has two children. And if you're thinking of the slap shot, here we go.
Come on, and the three of you guys, you pull one thing, you're out of this game. Now I run a clean game here. I have any trouble, I'll suspend you. I'm listening to a f***ing song!
Great movie, classic.
Great movie.
And rounding out, we got our co-stars here. We have Bob Gershon as taxi driver and Joe Rivero as Garby. And just a quick shot of Miami Vice in the news. The late Burt Young from episode Give a Little, Take a Little would have been 84 on April 30th. Happy heavenly birthday there, Burt.
Okay, fans, we are going to begin our discussion of Heroes of the Revolution. And it starts at a nightclub. It's basically a flashback to Havana, Cuba in 1961. And in the dressing room is a woman, dead ringer for Gina, is preparing to perform. She actually has a baby named Gina. In the main club area, Cuban soldiers enter, and then they were going to take a seat. Back in the dressing room, a man says they should have a baby of their own. And the woman says, not without being married. So the man proposes and she accepts. Back to the main room where Comandante Pedrosa orders champagne and prep for the show. In the dressing room, the man, whose name is Klaus, says to the woman, Elena Obregon, he will get her out of Cuba. Elena performs while Klaus stays with Gina. Pedrosa gets drunk and flashes back to seeing pics of Klaus. He gets distraught and shoots and kills Elena. Klaus enters the main room and shouts he is going to kill Pedrosa, who basically leaves from this nightclub unabated. Nobody stopped him.
You know, I'm surprised none of his other officers stopped him and was like, what the heck's going on, right? You know, it was just weird. But they said Comandante so much in this scene, I only had flashbacks to a Sopranos episode.
Commendator!
Commendatore. Anyway, that's just my twisted thoughts as I'm watching this.
It's so, the last episode of season.
I'm allowed to do it, right?
Yes.
Get your own show if you don't like it. Just kidding. So back to present day Miami here. The OCB team, they're on a stakeout, and then Crockett tells Gina and Trudy to dig up what they can on a dealer named Pedrosa. So anyway, Stan is taking pics of Pedrosa's home and the rest of the clan out there, and he sees someone else doing the same thing, although a little bit closer. This guy was really close, like right outside the wall, not really well hidden. But he asks Crockett if anyone else is running an op on Pedrosa, and Crockett's like, I have no idea, not to my knowledge. So back at OCB here, the team is briefing Marty on what they found, what's going on. And Trudy tells them that Pedrosa is the president and sole owner of Equinox Import and Export, which came to Miami in 1980.
Pedrosa is what do they import?
All right. Cigars. Sugar. Pedrosa is working on a 10-key deal with a guy named Garb. Stan gets a call and tells the team that Garba is on the move at the Miami International Airport. Things are moving pretty quick here. Stan tells Marty he's going to get blow-ups of the pictures of the other guy who was watching Pedrosa.
And now we're at Miami International, and Crockett and Tubbs arrive at the airport where another agent tells them that Garb is booked on a flight to New York City in 20 minutes and hands them tickets on the same flight. Meanwhile, Stan develops the pics, and it turns out to be Klaus. Marty tells him that this man is trained, basically to be fly under the radar, things like that. Marty goes then to the FBI field office and asks them if they have any ongoing investigation of Pedrosa. An agent tells Marty, whoever this guy is, he's not one of theirs. This agent calls in Chuck Blakemore, who may have more answers about Pedrosa. Chuck tells Marty that Pedrosa was a hatchet man in Cuba during the revolution. Marty tells them that Pedrosa is developing a major import biz in Miami. Marty shows Chuck Klaus's photo, and he does not recognize him, but he will send it to DC for further identification. He warns Marty to be careful, as Pedrosa is a sociopath.
I can't believe I didn't see this guy before. He's in over 75% of the photographs.
He didn't see him because he doesn't want to be seen. This man's trained.
Come on, contract? Federal? Foreign?
I don't know.
He's not one of ours.
Is there a federal operation ongoing against Pedrosa?
Send Blakemore in. Chet's our interagency liaison man. If there's anything going on, he'll know about it. Chet Blakemore? Lieutenant Martin Castillo, Miami Vice.
Lieutenant.
Mr. Blakemore.
Martin's running an investigation on one Orestes Pedrosa.
Cancer old charmer.
You know him?
It's one of Cancer's hatchet men during the early days. Dropped out of sight. Surfaced in Miami right after the boat left.
Anyone currently got him targeted?
Not that I know of. What's Vice's interest?
Well, he's developing himself as a major importer.
So now we're at Pedrosa's apartment. I don't know if it's a apartment. It's a house. It's an actual house, not an apartment. One of Pedrosa's guys shows him photos of Klaus. So obviously they were staking out whoever was staking them out, and is told that he's been in Miami for 2 days. Pedrosa tells his crew, essentially, find him. I think he said, find him, torture him, or make him hurt, and then kill him. So,
yes.
He knows his days are probably numbered, and he wants his and Klaus taken care of here. So, meanwhile, back in New York City, New York, Crockett and Tubbs are in a cab, and they're following Garb. Garb gets out, enters a building, and a cab driver named Ivan, he just freaks out. It's like, hey, I know nothing. I just got a family. Leave me alone or whatever. Crockett's like, what's going on? What's wrong? And Ivan pleads with them that, I know nothing. Leave him alone. Leave my family alone. He thinks Crockett and Tubbs are KGB. Ivan tells him that that is a Cuban mission to the UN. And then this is where Tubbs drops a great one-liner.
You're not KGB?
Get out of here.
Do I look like a Russian to you?
So now we have Stan, Gina, Trudy are following Klaus. And I'm not sure how they even picked him up. That was something that was not really said. How did they know where to find him, that they're following this guy? They have photos. Right. They don't even know who he is, but they're following him. Mm. And he's also being followed by Pedrosa's guys. Gene and Trudy trail them down the Miami streets. Klaus stops at a dry cleaner's as the goons move in. Gene and Trudy realize it's a hit, and they intervene. Shots are fired. A bystander's hit, but Klaus escapes. Then a little bit later, Gene and Trudy are being question about the shooting incident. Marty shows up and is told by Metro Sheriff that they have nothing that ties this shooting to Pedrosa. Gina tells Marty that Klaus, an unknown subject at this point, speaks with a German accent and she may have shot him. Mari tells her all hospitals and clinics have been alerted. Klaus, meanwhile, is in the crowd watching Gina, probably thinking he is seeing a ghost.
I've got to think he knows. I mean, this guy, Klaus, is supposed to be so highly trained, right? He's got to know who Gina is and where she's
at. Yeah, I think.
Now we're back at Miami International Airport. Garba here picks up his luggage, and as he makes it to his car, almost, Crockett and Tubbs move in for the bust. Garba bites down on cyanide and dies. Ooh, talk about taking one for the team. And then Crockett smells it. What's a telltale sign for the odor for cyanide?
Bitter almond. I don't know how you know that. If you get overcome by it, who's the verified? Who verifies it, Mark?
maybe they put that bitter almond in all the cyanide, right? Like they do mercaptan for natural gas. So, you know,
maybe they do.
If anybody out there knows, put it in the comments, please.
Hazmat Bob.
So back at OCB, Crockett and Tubbs are telling Marty that Pedrosa has a diplomatic supply line through Cuba. And then Marty notes they have no evidence linking the two men together.
Pedrosa's got a diplomatic supply line through Cuba. This thing's huge, Marty.
We have no evidence linking Garvey to Pedrosa.
He sure as hell isn't some freelancer from Little Havana who just happened to have a cyanide capsule.
The guy walked out of the Cuban mission with the suitcases.
So Marty gets a call from the FBI, and he's asked to come to the field office. They have ID'd the unknown subject in the photo. We now find Klaus at a bodega when he sees Pedrosa's guys moving in from across the street. And he asks the clerk there, you got a back door? And he slips him some cash and says, you didn't see me here. And then he slips out the back door. So when one of the goons comes in looking around, he goes out the back door as well. Klaus captures him. I think he wraps a wire around his neck and strangles him to death. So Klaus then shows up at Gina's place. She draws down on him and she's like, who the heck are you? He tells her who he is. And then he shows her a picture of her mother, Elena. And then Klaus goes on to tell her they were in love when she died and the whole rigmarole of back in the 60s.
So now we have Marty at the FBI field office again, and he's told the man in a photo is Klaus Herzog, a high-ranking officer in the East German intelligence. He speaks probably about a dozen languages and is a trained assassin. His dad was killed by the Nazis in 1939. However, the FBI has no clue why he's in Miami, but they believe that his presence may indicate East German involvement in Pedrosa's drug trade or a cleanup detail if Pedrosa is out of control. Marty wants to bring Klaus in, but the FBI tells him that may be difficult as he is trained to stay under the radar.
Right. And so far, Klaus has done nothing that they've seen.
Yep.
He's done nothing legal yet. So anyway, we're back at Gina's place here. And then Gina and Klaus are talking. And then she learned through her aunt, who raised her, that her father was killed during the revolution and her mother was a singer. Gina wants to know how she was killed, and Klaus tells her that's not really important. And then Gina retorts that she wants the details as a way to get close to her mother. He only says that many things happened after her death. Gina lived with her aunt, and then Gina asks Klaus about himself. He tells her that he's a communist with East German intelligence. She wants to know, why are you here? What's going on? Why are you in Miami? This is all while that she knows that the vice team is supposed to be figuring out who he is. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He tells her that Elena was killed by a man. And then Gina asks Pedrosa. Klaus tells her that he's going to kill him as revenge. So now you got probable cause to detain him, but still he has really not done anything yet.
You're not Cuban. Who are you?
My name is Klaus Herzog. I'm a communist. And I'm an officer of East German intelligence.
Why are you in Miami?
Your mother was killed by a man, a jealous lover. And that's why I'm here.
Pedrosa?
I'm going to kill him.
So now we're at OCB, and during a team briefing, Gina remains tense and quiet. Nobody really notices this, though. They don't question her on it. Marty briefs them about the train. No, they don't, right? Marty briefs them about the train killer named Klaus. Tubbs asks why the feds won't bring Klaus in. Marty says that they're the ones that keep spotting him, so stand it. How, again, this is a very big unanswered question, and I have several that are in my review at the end. This one I forgot about. Later, Gina's at Klaus's hotel room where he is talking about his and Elena's romance. Gina does not remember her mom and tells Klaus she's under orders to arrest him. Klaus says she wants the same thing he does. And Gina says, so what if I do? He asks Gina if she can sing, and she said never professionally, but he says her singing will lure Pedroza out. Klaus tells her there's a club that will hire her as a singer. Klaus says Gina will be the bait, as Pedroza will eventually show at a club like this. So Gina auditions at the Blue Note nightclub and wins a job when she sings Stormy Weather.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. The first lady, absolutely terrible, off key. And, and the owner is just, you could tell he's like, oh, geez, I got to go through this again. So back at OCB, Crock and Tubbs brief the team that they cannot find Klaus, as he may be onto them. And Gina still is clammed up. She's not saying nothing. I don't even think she's looking up. Marty tells them to find him ASAP. When everybody leaves, Gina then goes to Marty, closes the door, and tells them that she's had a meeting with Klaus. And Marty asks, did you arrest him? She responds that she couldn't. And then Marty says she can't decide this on her own. That's not what cops do. Gina tells him it's not about being a cop. Marty says, yes, it is. And then she tells Marty that Klaus wants to take out Pedroza for killing a woman. Marty tells her that we don't sanction vendettas.
We don't sanction vendettas.
As Marty gives her the stare. And then Gina starts breaking down and tells him the woman was her mother that he killed. Castillo's still staring at her. You could tell he's starting to understand. You could tell right away he gets it. So Gina asks for a week off, and then Marty approves. As she leaves, he calls to her and the stairs.
You know, was he silently, through body language, was he actually giving approval for the vendetta? That if something happened, he would look the other way?
And then this is where I think, going back to Golden Triangle, right? Castillo, he definitely understands being a cop doesn't make one immune to things that happen to you that are personal. You know, he had the family back in the day, and now they were back in Miami, right? And then somebody was going to, I think, kill the husband or something like that. I can't remember, but he knows. Personal is personal.
It's about Klaus Herzog. I've seen him. I've talked to him.
You didn't arrest him?
I couldn't.
That's something a police officer can't do or decide on his own.
I'm not sure this thing is about being a cop.
It has to be. You are one. As long as you wear the badge.
But he wants Pedroza as badly as we do, maybe even worse. Pedroza killed the woman he loved 26 years ago. He's been tracking him ever since.
We don't sanction vendettas.
Lieutenant, you don't understand about this woman. She was my mother.
So now at the Blue Note Club, Pedroza shows up for a night of jazz with his entourage, and then Gina takes the stage and sings Someone to Watch Over Me. He starts seeing ghosts along with images of Klaus in his head, and he gets up and says, I don't need to endure this, and gets up and hurries to leave. Now, Tim, do you think he kind of recognizes her, or was this just maybe stirring up the fog in his head?
I think it was starting to stir it up for him.
Right.
That's why I think so. I mean, because he's getting doing the flashbacks and stuff.
So now at Klaus's apartment here, Gina goes to see Klaus, and he comes in after her. Gina tells him that the feds are after him, and he begs him to go back to East Germany. Klaus wonders if Pedroza will be given a minor sentence, but the murder will go unanswered, which, you know, is very probable in this, especially back then, but more so now. Okay, yeah, you didn't kill a person here. We're just going to bust you for the drugs. He says that street justice is the only way to avenge Elena's death. Got a point, I guess. Gina is under orders to arrest, not kill Pedroza. Klaus says that he's going to be the bait at the Blue Note. And when Pedroza tries to kill him, Gina can then make the arrest for the attempted murder.
So the FBI meet with Crockett, Tubbs, and Marty at OCB. They want Pedroza, but they ask OCB team to do the dirty work. They don't want Pedroza to think the feds are involved or he will escape Miami. Just bust him on a drug deal, major, minor, doesn't matter what it is. Tubbs tells the feds that they will owe him. Meanwhile, at Pedroza's, he tells his guys he plans to kill Klaus at the Blue Note, but he's going to go and do it himself as a matter of honor.
It's like maybe you got a mosquito or a fly in your bedroom at night, huh?
So what do you do, huh?
The German.
He gets the same treatment. He will come to hear her. Yeah, whether it's tonight or tomorrow, the night after that. And I will be there.
Maybe we better go, huh?
No. No, this one I do by myself. This is a matter of honor.
Because of that just little scene right there, I think we answered our question that when he was in the Blue Note the first time, he recognized Gina and thought she was Elena, but I don't think so. I think he knew that she had a daughter. So I think it answers that because he's saying Klaus will come to see her. So now we're back at the Blue Note in the dressing room, and Klaus and Gina are preparing for his arrival. Klaus is wearing a bulletproof vest. Gina is nervous about the waiting game. Klaus reassures her that Pedrosa is impatient and they will not have to wait long. Gina is worried that Klaus will be killed, and he says he has faith in her that she will do her job to protect him.
All right, let's wrap up this final scene for the final episode here. Crockett, Tubbs, Trudy, and Stan arrived to serve a warrant to Pedrosa at his place. The place is surrounded by Metro units. The warrant is served. Drugs are visible, but they just want Pedrosa. One thug tells them he went to the Blue Note, and then Trudy knows the place. And I think didn't Tubbs kick like a tray of coke or something like that, and it landed on one of the thugs?
Yes, he did. There was powder everywhere.
It looked like this dude was attacking a bag of powdered donuts.
Nose candy.
So anyway, Trudy knows the place. So now we're at the Blue Note, and then Klaus is seated in the audience. And then Gina starts singing Stormy Weather when Pedrosa shows up. Pedrosa takes a seat and then sees Klaus in the audience. He gets up and fires at Klaus. Gina announces who she is as Mammy Vice, fires and kills Pedrosa. So Kraken Tubbs arrive to find Pedrosa dead. Job done, right? So Klaus takes off out the front door and Gina goes after him. The two lock eyes from a distance, and then Klaus disappears into the distance, leaving Gina in the freeze frame ending. All right, everybody. IMDb gives this a 7.6. Final episode. What do you think, Tim?
Mark, I think it was a great finish to the season. I loved how season 3 was bookended by Gina-centric story, starting with When Irish Eyes Are Crying and ending with the heroes of the revolution. Basic, simple plot that centered around Klaus seeking the exact revenge for the death of his short-lived fiance, Elena, who was killed by Pedrosa. Innuendo was made that Elena and Pedrosa were lovers at one time, and that was made by Klaus. But to me, this begs the question, was Pedrosa really her father? Did her aunt lie and tell her that her dad was killed in revolution? It made me think about that. Another unanswered question we kind of delved into this already was the stare that Marty gave Gina as she left his office after telling the real story behind Klaus. Was it a half-hearted approval for Vendetta? And I thought I forgot about Golden Triangle, but I thought also another Marty-centric story, Bushido.
Mm-hmm.
Just some things to make you go, But to me, it was a great exclamation point to exit season 3.
Absolutely. Great finish for the season. The story was simple enough, not too many plot twists to get everyone confused here, except for the dude that went to New York and then popped the cyanide tablet. I mean, okay, yeah, that was showing that there were drugs and stuff involved, but that was kind of overshadowed by the whole Gina and Klaus. And
he needed to take one for the team that bad.
Right, right. Exactly. But that part of the story was kind of like, yeah, okay, he was doing, yeah, it was drugs, but the whole bigger story, and this, like you said, ended up being a Gina-centric episode, much like I said, Golden Triangle with Castillo, and then that's probably why he backed off once he knew Gina's mob was linked to these guys, and then Klaus didn't, like I said, Klaus didn't do anything on U.S. soil, so he was scot-free after the shooting. They had no reason to nab him except the link to Pedrosa. I think the writers could have made the Gina portion more intense, maybe as maybe a hostage of Pedrosa or something, you know, that could have spiced it up a little bit, but it was still very good. They did a good job here. A good season closer as all the Vice team work together. Definitely cannot wait for season 4, right, Tim?
Yep. Absolutely. It's good. It was a way to end it, much like season 3 when you had Calderon in there.
Mm-hmm. A little cliffhanger. And like you said, with Pedrosa, was Gina Pedrosa's child. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, maybe that's why he was so peeved in the beginning, you know, back in Cuba.
Yes.
So it's, you know, that was his lover, but was that his daughter? And he didn't want another dude taking care of his daughter. That would have been even more of a oomph for the final one, but we didn't get that. So it is what it is. Okay, let's check out the music for this episode. We've got the first one, Begin the Beguin by Sandra Santiago, sung live at the nightclub by Gina's mother. Stormy Weather by Sandra Santiago. That's when Gina is auditioning in the nightclub. And the end sequence, Jazz Singer by Nancy Reed. That was sung live at the nightclub. And Someone to Watch Over Me by Sandra Santiago, sung live at the nightclub. I wonder if they recorded this like in a studio and then just dubbed it while she was.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure.
But if it was really her, she got a pretty good voice.
Yep. Well, they're saying it's her, so got to think it is. And there was no Jan Hammer music credited to this episode.
Fun facts and locations. We've got a location here, the Hotel Victor, 1144 Ocean Drive in Miami Beach. That was the El Gato Negro Club in Havana, Blue Club as well in Miami.
And we have a fact. This is the only episode where all of the non-Jan Hammer music is sung live. So they're saying it was sung live.
A goof. During the attempted hit on Herzog by Pedrosa's men outside there, some of the civilians on the sidewalk, and I caught this right away, they can be seen jumping out of the way long before the shooting actually starts.
And now we have a location, the alley behind Club Deuce, 222 14th Street, Miami Beach, and that's where Klaus is ambushed, leaving the store. I call it a bodega, but...
Another fun fact here. At one point, Crockett tells the FBI agents in the office, you boys are going to need a little work before you look like James Bond. A month after the episode aired, Crab would appear, Klaus, as the main antagonist in The Living Daylights, playing treacherous Soviet general and drug dealer Georgi Koskov. I remember that one. It was with
yes, I do
Timothy,
too.
Timothy Dalton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember it too.
Final trivia for this season. Last episode, we asked, what was the name of the ambulance company that took Mikey to the hospital? And that was the American Ambulance Company.
This episode's trivia question is, what's the name of the moving company on the truck during the hit at the laundromat? You can post your answers on this episode's Facebook post, or you can email us at miamivice@duck.com, and we will reveal the answer when we do our recap of season 3.
And we've arrived at the Stern's Chalkboard of Wisdom. We hope to inspire, enlighten, or make you snicker a little. In both the world of Miami Vice and our world at large, we encounter many challenges we all work to overcome. And in the interest of creating a family-friendly atmosphere through the show and our social media, we like to offer some parting thoughts, be it a simple quote, a phrase, or words of encouragement, or a funny quip to you, our listeners. Because without you, our friends, we'd just be talking to ourselves. And yes, we call you our friends because that's what we consider all of you who follow our show and social media and comment as well. So this episode's quote is, by working faithfully 8 hours a day, you may eventually get to be boss and work 12 hours a day. And that's from Robert Frost.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us on this review. We hope you found this episode exciting and entertaining. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing to our podcast and following us on our social media channels to stay updated on our latest episodes. On Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, we are Vice of Miami Podcast. Your support means everything to us, and if you have a spare moment, we would be incredibly grateful if you could leave us a rating and a review on those channels. Thanks again for listening, and we can't wait to share more with you soon. So we'll catch you next time on the Vice in Miami podcast on show 74, covering the season 3 recap. Now,
beat it, punks.